This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Continuing with the historian and author David Petrucha, his new book, 1920, The Year of the Six Presidents. Wilson is frail forever in the White House, so he has ambitions for a third term. Teddy Roosevelt is gone in January of 2019. Warren G. Harding has been nominated by the Republicans in Chicago earlier in the summer of 1920. It is now early July 1920, and the Democrats are meeting in San Francisco, first time they've ever held a convention on the West Coast. At the contest now is between the party regulars. They have favorites. One is named McAdoo, who is the son-in-law of Woodrow Wilson. He married Woodrow Wilson's daughter. He's a leading candidate. And another candidate, a leading candidate, is the governor of Ohio, Jimmy Cox. But we need to attend to the setup for the nomination process, which will take many ballots. And the setup includes what do you do, because you owe everything to where you've been these last years with Wilson. He was the first Democrat to win the presidency, excepting Grover Cleveland, who was the governor of New York as well in the 1880s and 1890s, the first Democrat to win the White House since the Civil War. So Wilson's achieved something for the Democrats that no other candidate had been able to take the solid South and add to it northern states enough to win the Electoral College. But Wilson is now seen as a negative to the campaign, to the party, because of, one, the League of Nations that he insists upon. Two, he will not compromise with the Republican Senate, though the compromise is offered again and again. And three, Wilson himself imagines that he can be a candidate. At some point, there needs to be demonstrations when every name is entered into the nomination process. And it's very sad and moving that Wilson's name is not celebrated at all, except Frank Roosevelt and a colleague of his, Mr. Lunn, and four others from the New York delegation. They're their own demonstration. What does it look? What do they do, David? Do they march around the convention hall with signs for Wilson?
Yeah, they have a banner. I mean, there's a big banner of Woodrow Wilson hanging from the rafters, but it's a pretty grim-looking banner. And the one, presumably, that Frank Roosevelt is parading around with the former socialist mayor of Schenectady, Mr. Lunn, is presumably more cheerful. But they are not met with, shall we say, huzzas by the majority of the New York delegation. Charles Murphy, who is the boss of Tammany Hall, and Al Smith, one of his minions, who is the governor of New York at this point, future presidential candidate and pal of Franklin Roosevelt, they're not particularly happy about this. And frankly, neither is anyone else. Wilson has dispatched his Secretary of State, a guy named Bainbridge Colby, to the convention to try to stampede the convention. And when he tells this to the rest of his cabinet members who are there, they are horrified by this idea. And he says, they treated me like I was a criminal.
Dr. Grayson believes that if Wilson wins the nomination, it will kill him. Did I read that correctly? Yeah. Grayson who says that.
Wilson is just a mess at that point. And he had health problems even before getting to the presidency. That's one reason why he keeps a very low or small or weak work schedule, even before the big stroke in 1919. He does not put in a full day. He takes it easy. And one of the things about that trip out west is his schedule is so onerous, as well was with the Treaty of Versailles, that it literally almost kills him.
We need to talk about the other candidates in the Democratic Party, because as you've explained, it's going to take many ballots, more than 40 ballots, to come up with someone who wins more than two-thirds. This is the two-thirds rule for the Democrats. Who is McAdoo?
William Gibbs McAdoo was not only Wilson's son-in-law, but he was Secretary of the Treasury. And he was Secretary of the Treasury before he was the son-in-law. He was a very, he had backed Wilson in 1912, was a big campaign manager type back then, capable guy. The historian Johnson says that that he's probably the great, one of the greatest secretaries of the Treasury ever. He runs the railroad during World War One. He's a substantial guy. He's going to be known, however, as the Klan candidate 4 years hence. And he's also a prohibitionist, a dry. But he's a progressive. I mean, these things are not exclusive at that point. I mean, the big dry in the country at that point is a very progressive populist guy named, who is at the convention, William Jennings Bryan, but not running.
Yeah, dry and wet. That it refers to the prohibition.
Yes.
And Bryan is dry. Cox
is dry.
Cox is wet. John Cox is wet.
He's moderately wet. He's not as wet as, say, Al Smith. And Al Smith is a favorite son candidate. And there are all these favorite son. You know, this is what we're not seeing in 2024. We're not seeing the favorite son candidates who could, you know, like a Sununu in New Hampshire could presumably have, in the old rules, have been gone to the convention holding those votes in his pocket. Back then, there were a lot of guys like that.
At this moment, it's important to cite the future. And the future is Al Smith. Why? Because his name is mentioned as a candidate, and he was in, after the first ballot, he has 109 votes, and that's enough to move up if things had gone in a different direction. But he's the first viable Roman Catholic in any convention, Republican or Democrat. Is that correct, David?
Yeah, and, you know, he's going to be a real contender 4 years hence when he's nominated by Franklin D. Roosevelt. And Roosevelt does that on crutches. He's been hit by polio at that point. But Smith is still kind of wobbly in terms of popularity that year. He's going to lose the governorship in November.
I just cite that because that's the future, but it won't be until 1960 that a Roman Catholic candidate is successful as in the presidency. Jack Kennedy, of course. Mitchell Palmer, who is he?
A. Mitchell Palmer is a former Pennsylvania congressman, Democrat. He is the Attorney General of the United States, most known for the Palmer raids, which went after a bunch of radical, shall we say, aliens, deports them. And he is wary to do that at first until an anarchist arrives at his front steps with a carrying a rather big bomb, which luckily for A. Mitchell Palmer goes off on those front steps, blowing that anarchist to bits. There's blood and guts all over the street in Washington, and the anarchist's scalp lands on the roof of the house across the street, which belongs to Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt.
Yes, they're just coming home. As they hear the bomb, they rush home to see if the children are fine. They are. I love Eleanor. The 9-year-old comes out and she says, "Get back to bed immediately. There's only been a bomb outside, Mom."
Yeah.
Okay, fine. And Nicholas and Alice Roosevelt are coming home. Nicholas
Longworth
and Alice Roosevelt hear the bomb as well, and they're told by a policeman, and they rush to the scene. So this is a major crisis in the Wilson administration. It happens in June of 2019, the year of strike, 1919. Sorry, I slipped a century there, 1919. So McAdoo on the first ballot, McAdoo 266, Palmer 256, Cox 134, Smith 109. There are many more names down to William Randolph Hearst, one vote, and Josephus Daniels, one vote. But we're going to turn to all these ballots that go on for several days. They take a break on Sunday night and meet again on Monday morning. And David, you've described the two-thirds majority. At some point, they recognized that McAdoo and Cox were trading the lead back and forth. What tipped it to Cox?
Being that available man. He was running that same sort of campaign that, I mean, the parallels between Cox and Harding are so eerie. They're both from Ohio. They're both sort of moderates. They hold statewide office in Ohio. They're newspaper publishers. The Cox family does a hell of a lot better than the Harding family, which sells out of their little tiny newspaper very shortly afterwards. Cox becomes Cox Communications. It's a multi-billion dollar company right now. And Cox is more of a wet, more of an anti-prohibitionist person at that point. They're both going to assume positions on the League of Nations by the time the convention is over, and they go in different directions. Harding becomes anti, and Cox, from being sort of wobbly and in the middle, goes the other way and turns out to be a big supporter of the League.
And Cox wins on, I think it's the 44th ballot. You lose count sometimes. Cox takes the lead, and we now need a vice president. It's not quite by total voice call, but Roosevelt emerges as everybody's favorite. Why? What did they like about him?
He's a Roosevelt. He's got the right last name. He's been Assistant Secretary of the Navy during the war and done fairly well. I came across a poster recently of where people were asked to turn in their binoculars for the Navy. Okay, during the war to spot U-boats or something, and to turn them in to Assistant Secretary of the Navy Franklin Roosevelt in person.
That's wonderful.
So he was politicizing that department even in the midst of war, and he's from New York. He's from New York, and he has the support of Tammany Hall. He had battled Tammany Hall early in his career, but he makes peace with him. Part of it is because they want to get him out of New York. Sort of like the New York Republican campaign material or machine had wanted to get rid of TR in 1900. So there's a lot of reasons, and Cox has no objections to him, kind of likes him. And so he fills that slot.
Harding and Coolidge, Cox and Roosevelt. Next, the campaigns. 1920, the year of the six presidents. David Petrucci is the author. I'm John Batchelor.